from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Hi, I'm Travis DiNicola, and today, before the year is out, we'll revisit a few of our favorite recent interviews.
We'll run my interview with Indiana Poetry Out Loud champion Zach Rooker.
I'll chat with the new director of CTS, Dr. Matthew Bolton.
And then I'll chat with musician Carrie Newcomer about her new album. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Each year, the National Endowment for the Arts and the Poetry Foundation partner with the Indiana Arts Commission to support Poetry Out Loud, a program that encourages high school students to explore great poetry through memorization and recitation. This year's state champion, Zach Rooker, joined Sharon Gamble by phone to talk about how he discovered poetry, what it was like representing Indiana at the National Poetry Out Loud competition last spring, and what he plans to do in the future.
So, Zach, I want to ask how you got interested in poetry. Do you remember the first time you heard a poem or read a poem and it just grabbed you?
I mean, I grew up. Reading Shel Silverstein books and reading funny poetry and humorous poems like that. But the first time I really got interested in reciting poetry, especially for Poetry Out Loud and that type of recitation, was in middle school. My father homeschooled me while I was in middle school. And during that time, part of my English curriculum was we'd memorize about 8 poems a year. And so by the end of middle school, I had memorized about 16 poems. And when I found Poetry Out Loud, it seemed like a perfect fit.
You know, it's interesting to deal with the challenge of memorization in an age when everything is so immediate. You just turn to your smartphone or turn your netbook on and Google is right there to assist you. We don't have to memorize very much anymore.
Right.
Do you have an interest in theater or public speaking at all?
Well, I do, actually. I've been practicing public speaking ever since really second grade. I've been making presentations at my school. I had the opportunity actually to give a presentation on Pearl Harbor at the 65th anniversary a few years ago.
Cool.
In fact, and so I've done a lot of public speaking. And in terms of my interest in theater, I have gotten involved in my school's theater program. And I go back and forth between acting in a role and doing the behind-the-scenes tech.
Is it different for you when you're acting in a role on stage or reciting poetry out loud? Do you have a persona you create for yourself when you're reciting poetry?
Well, when I'm reciting the poems that I've picked out for Poetry Out Loud, one of the criteria when I'm picking out my poems is that I want to pick out 3 poems that I can feel, that I can be moved by. And so that really helps in terms of putting emotion into it and inflection and getting the mood across, because I've personally felt these poems myself.
And I'm sure you're tired of people asking you this question, but would you be willing to share one of your favorites with us?
Sure. I would say the poem that I'm most connected with out of the 3 that I chose for this year's Poetry Out Loud was A Psalm of Life by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Would you like me to recite it?
I sure would, yeah.
All right. A Psalm of Life by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Tell me not in mournful numbers, life is but an empty dream, for the soul is dead that slumbers, and things are not what they seem. Life is real, life is earnest, and the grave is not its goal. Dust thou art, to dust returnest, was not spoken of the soul. Not enjoyment, and not sorrow, is our destined end or way, but to act that each tomorrow find us farther than today. Art is long, and time is fleeting, and our hearts, though stout and brave, still, like muffled drums, are beating funeral marches to the grave. In the world's broad field of battle, in the bivouac of life, be not like dumb, driven cattle. Be a hero in the strife. Trust no future, howe'er pleasant. Let the dead past bury its dead. Act, act in the living present. Heart within, and God o'erhead. Lives of great men all remind us we can make our lives sublime, and, departing, leave behind us footprints on the sands of time, footprints that perhaps another, sailing o'er life's solemn main, a forlorn and shipwrecked brother, seen, shall take heart again. Let us, then, be up and doing, with a heart for any fate, still achieving, still pursuing, learn to labor and to wait.
Wow. That's amazingly moving, and you have such a wonderful sense of capturing the meaning, but also capturing the love of language, the internal rhymes and the beautiful shapes of vowels and consonants. What attracted you to this? Is there some particular reason that you're feeling? I mean, this really is kind of an older person's poem. I have to tell you this. This is a poem for somebody who's had a lot of life. Do you read a lot?
I do read a lot, but the reason why I chose this poem, there are kind of two reasons. One, all the three poems that I did for Poetry Out Loud are connected. That they all have a different outlook on life. I did A Dream Within a Dream by Edgar Allan Poe. Mm-hmm. I did Dover Beach by Matthew Arnold.
Oh, and, one of my favorites.
And a Psalm of Life by Longfellow. And I feel like Longfellow truly captures my viewpoint on life the best. And well, you know, you say that that poem reflects the view of someone older. One thing, personally, I felt about this poem when I was looking through it is one thing I like is I feel like the person, the narrator, the person who in the poem is expressing this thought, I feel ages throughout the poem. He starts off as a young man, you know, don't let the problems of life get in your way. And it just goes from what I feel, the youthfulness at the beginning to the wisdom at the end. And that's why I like that poem.
Mm. What was it like, both at the state level and then going to D.C., being surrounded by other people who have this same love for saying and hearing poetry out loud? Did you meet people and immediately kind of understood something about each other?
Yes, certainly. At the national level, I mean, you're there for 3 days, and there are 53 other people from around the country. You have people, you have one from D.C., and a couple of the territories are represented. And so you have 53 like-minded people who all love poetry, and it's a very interesting time. We would spend the couple nights there. Actually, we would go outside and recite poetry that we liked, and so it was a wonderful experience to be around all those people who had a love of poetry.
Wow. Are you attracted to all different styles of poetry? Do you do slam poetry, or is there a particular era that you kind of have embraced as, this is my poetry, I love the romantic poetry, or whatever?
Well, I would certainly not say that I am the poetry connoisseur that perhaps many of the students at the National Round of Poetry Out Loud are, but I feel like any poem that expresses a view on life, I usually gravitate to. I'm interested in hearing people's viewpoint on what life means to them.
Hmm. Do you write?
I do. I do some writing. Most writing I do is actually historical. I do a lot of research and on historical topics, and a lot of my writing focuses around my research in history.
Mm-hmm. What's ahead for you? I'm sure you're thinking about college, have made a decision maybe. What are you going to study?
Well, it's quite interesting when people hear I'm the Indiana Poetry Out Loud champion, and I've spent a lot of time with poetry, but that they think I might want to pursue a career, perhaps in English or something. But ever since fourth grade, I've really been interested in math and science, and I'm looking at attending Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland to study mechanical engineering.
Wow, that's a challenge.
Yes, it will be, but it'll be a good one.
And the great thing is, as an articulate young man, you'll be able to describe anything that you've invented or perfected.
Right. I feel like Poetry Out Loud, really, even if you're not going into a career that really deals with poetry or writing or some form of English, it can still really help you. It amazed me, truly, when I went to the national competition, and almost everyone there wasn't interested in a career in English. Instead, you found many people who want to become doctors or scientists or engineers, mathematicians, and it's something about, I think it might be the work ethic of someone who has that strive that you can work hard enough at Poetry Out Loud.
That makes great sense. And I know you have at least one teacher or administrator sitting in the room where you're using the phone to have this conversation. So pass along to your teachers and administrators. They're doing a fine job in letting you and your classmates know the value of a well-rounded education.
Yes, well, my school has certainly embraced Poetry Out Loud, and it really has become a great thing at the school. In fact, every single freshman, a class of 550, has to memorize a poem, and then they have the opportunity to present that poem at the school Poetry Out Loud competition.
That's fantastic. Keep up the good work. And thank you so much for making time to talk with us. It was delightful to hear you and talk with you.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Sharon Gamble with Indiana's Poetry Out Loud champion, Zach Rooker. Find out more about the program at poetryoutloud.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Dr. Matthew Meyer Bolton is the new president of the Christian Theological Seminary, or CTS, the ecumenical seminary located near the Butler campus. His past work and research has been focused on understanding the historical and contemporary connections between art and religion. Travis DiNicola spoke with Dr. Bolton to find out more.
Give me a brief sort of overview of what CTS, the Christian Theological Seminary, is. Many people know it as that sort of interesting building in the park that's near Butler, but tell me a little bit more.
That's right. We're right next to Butler, and part of that is because we are a child of Butler in a way. In the middle of the 19th century, Northwest Christian University was set up by the members of the Disciples Movement, who wanted to have a seminary that taught seminarians about how to be a pastor, but that didn't include teachings about slavery being legitimate. In other words, this was an abolitionist part of the Disciples Movement, and they wanted a seminary in non-slaveholding territory. So Northwest Christian eventually became Butler, and the Butler School of Religion, or the kind of part of that university that handled religion, eventually went independent, and that became Christian Theological Seminary, and that's who we are. So we're right adjacent to Butler, and of course just down the road from the IMA.
Right. Great location, beautiful spot. And you know, a lot of people remember, of course, the days when CTS used to have great theatrical productions. That was something that many people knew your organization for, but there's certainly a lot more to it than that. Part of what you do, you're actually an education institution still.
That's right. We train folks in master's programs that include counseling programs, master's of divinity programs, the classic degree for those who want to be pastors. But we have folks who want to be those pastors, want to be those counselors, and others who want to be leaders of nonprofit organizations or doctors or lawyers. We have a really wide range of students. We're still rooted in the Disciples of Christ, but we are ecumenical now. In other words, we've got lots of different, 30 different denominations are represented in our students and faculty, and we do all kinds of work with them of an educational nature. You're right, though. Our building itself is a work of art. It's it's a beautiful expression of mid-century modern architecture. Edward Larrabee Barnes, a world-renowned architect, built the building, and we house or curate, you could say, a marvelous collection of mid-century modern art. So it's itself a kind of work of art in which we live and learn. And as you know, I'm a big believer in the idea that religion and the arts belong together. And so that's part of my vision as the new president of Christian Theological Seminary, is to bring that even more to the fore. Our faculty has been working on that theme for years. We have an extraordinary faculty with respect to the arts. And so what I want to do is to bring that to the forefront of the city's mind and find a way for us to connect in more imaginative ways with the city and have them connect to us and come on campus. I can't tell you how many people have told me about that Edeveen Theater, you know, where cars lined up around the block for those theatrical productions. And so what I'm imagining is, what if we could refurbish and reintroduce the Shelton Auditorium, where the theater was housed, and have theatrical productions there, musical productions there, spoken word productions there. I think the sky's the limit.
Well, that's great to hear, because that is certainly something that I know many people are sentimental for. They think back of their trips to going to the Edeveen at CTS and all the great experiences they had there. And that was something that actually kind of wrapped up about the time that I moved to Indianapolis. So I didn't have that experience, but I hear about it from my wife and certainly from other people as well.
Yes.
But let me just ask you, though. I mean, you are new to this position, been in Indianapolis about 4 months, I believe. You are the president and therefore the leader of this organization. And as you alluded to, a big part of what CTS is working on is developing leaders.
Yes.
So how did you come to this role? I know you just moved here from Boston, used to live in Michigan, but how did you come to this role of leading this leadership movement?
Well, for the past 10 years, I've been a professor of theology and worship, first at Andover Newton Theological School, which is a small seminary similar to CTS. And then at Harvard Divinity School. And all the way along, I was training people who want to be leaders of Christian churches, and I did my teaching and my training through the arts. Almost all of my classes included some way of engaging the arts. For example, there was a course at Harvard I taught for many years called Passion Play, where we looked at the history of passion plays, which, as you know, is really the origin of Western drama today. We think of the Greeks and the Greek tradition of drama, but there was about 1,000 years after the Greeks where there wasn't much drama at all in Europe. And so the recent birth of theater was really in the medieval European scene. Mm-hmm. Priests trying to get you and me to come to church or trying to get their parishioners to come to church. And so just like today, using the arts to attract but also to enliven and illuminate the great ideas, the great stories in the tradition, that's the origin of passion plays. They became so popular that they took over medieval towns, and even today in Europe and other places all over the world, you can find towns that are taken over periodically by passion plays. So we study mm-hmm. that in the course, and then we also study the particular ways in which Christian passion plays are associated with violence against Jews. That happened too often, of course. Once is too often, but it happened more often than that in medieval Europe. So we look at that difficult and shadowed history, and then we write a play. We wrote a mm-hmm. passion play. Every time we did the course, the seminar would write the play together, tackle that history of Christian anti-Judaism, and incorporate that into the play, but also read the four passion narratives in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and include scriptural language in the play. It was standing room only. The first year we did it, the Boston Globe did a story on it. Could we imagine something like that at CTS? I think we could, and I think people would come from miles around.
This is really interesting because, of course, I mean, you talked about the medieval passion plays, but you look back at whether it's Western visual art or music, storytelling, literature, architecture, of course, as well as theater. And really all the arts that we celebrate today have their roots, you know, either in the Renaissance or in medieval times, and very specifically with their development through the church at that time. In fact, you know, most of the churches were patrons, and that was often how the stories were told, whether it was through, as you mentioned, the passion plays or through the beautiful stained glass or the murals or what have you. But yet, you know, we look at that, and that's something that's just sort of assumed when you study art history, that, you know, especially when you're studying anything between the 14 to, you know, 1700s or so, that whether it's music history or theater history, that it's tied to the church. Yes. But yet, the church today, in many ways, with possibly the exception of choral music, is often very disconnected from the world of the arts.
That needs to change. It is changing in some places, but you're quite right that there is a very organic connection between religion and the arts generally. In fact, if you looked at human history and just looked at the arts, the vast majority across cultures, across religions, the vast majority of the arts that human beings have created is religious art.
Exactly. I mean, the separation has really only occurred over the past 100 to 150 years.
It's very new and very strange.
Yes.
So it would be very natural for us to engage and reconnect and point to the reunions that are happening in churches here and there, but then encourage new leaders to make those connections. You know, Bach, for example. People love Johann Sebastian Bach, and you in a elevator or in a restaurant, you hear, you know, da 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 da, and everybody knows that tune, and they say, "Oh, I love Bach." But of course, that tune is Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring. It's a piece, it's a portrait about Jesus. You might say, well, I don't need to know that in order to enjoy the music. And of course, that's true. You don't need to agree with Bach about Jesus either to enjoy the music. But to set it aside, to not know about it at all, is not taking Bach seriously. It's like listening to Bob Marley, but not taking his faith and conviction seriously. Mm-hmm. You have to really listen to Bob Marley, to really listen to Bach, to really read Emily Dickinson or Virginia Woolf, you need to have theological education, religious education.
And have that context.
Yes, you may or may not agree, of course. You may be a critic, as many of these artists were, but many of them were also driven by their faith. And so faith education and arts education belong together. And my faculty at CTS has long believed that, and we need to put our best foot forward for the city to attract folks to come to great events at CTS and for us to connect to great things going on in the city so we can learn from them. That is a symbiosis that I think could really do wonderful things for the church and wonderful things for the city.
Well, Matt, I must say that this is very exciting to hear you talk about this and address it in this way. Can you give us and again, I know you've only been here, I mean, since the late summer and, you know, are still sort of, you know, getting into all this. But can you give us some maybe a preview of what people can expect from CTS?
Well, what we want to do, what we dream about is gathering a group of partners and leaders, because we believe that the best ideas won't be ours. The best ideas will be ideas that come from others or that come from conversation with others. So I've already begun to gather some of those conversations so that I can get to know the city, get to know the arts organizations in the city, lift up some of my ideas, but also listen for ideas that might create that symbiosis where we have a great idea from a partner down the road here in Indy, and then a great idea from our faculty or from folks at CTS, and then CTS could become the place to host that event and invite the city to engage that event. For example, my parents, when they were in the when they were just married in the late 60s, they lived in Thailand. And they ran the lights, if you can picture this, in Thailand, they ran the lights at Carmina Burana. You know, dun, 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 dun. You know, a lot of people know it as an action movie soundtrack.
Sure.
So they ran the lights. So I thought that Carmina Burana, the symphony here, just did Carmina Burana recently. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to surprise them. They're visiting us in our new home. So I got them tickets and we went to Carmina Burana. Now, I'm looking through the notes. And I don't know if you know this. I didn't know this. Carmina Burana, Karl Orff, you know, it's a modern piece of music, but it's based on monastic manuscripts, medieval manuscripts of renegade monks who wrote poetry satirizing the church. But that poetry was so delightful, it was collected and kept by the monasteries. It was preserved by them. It sounds like something out of a Dan Brown novel.
Yeah, yeah.
And it shows the theological dimensions of that piece. Now imagine if Carmina Burana was done, but done in a way that highlighted its theological dimension. Maybe it's preceded by a beautiful, engaging lecture, or maybe it's followed by a panel discussion. I think there would be an audience that would love to explore that beautiful, beloved work of art.
Well, certainly.
But do it theologically as well.
Well, and Carmina Burana is also one of the most popular pieces that David Hautoy has ever choreographed for Dance Kaleidoscope.
Yes.
And certainly, so there's a lot of, you know, people who come to that piece in different ways in the city and know it in different ways, but may not understand that full context. Very interesting work you've set out in front of you here.
We think so too. David is already a wonderful partner of ours, and we're just reaching out and calling for those who are interested to engage with us in this process. We need donors, but we also need visionaries, people who can have the insight and the imagination to develop these kinds of programs. I think it would be a flagship thing for CTS, but also for Indianapolis to begin to put these pieces back together again.
Let me ask you one more question before I let you go here, and that is, earlier on you mentioned that CTS has a collection of mid-century art. Is that something that people can come and visit and see when you're open?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a really marvelous collection. A lot of it comes from the Irwin Miller collection, and Irwin Miller, of course, a great civic leader and industrialist, a kind of philanthropist and visionary for Indianapolis and Columbus and central Indiana in general, and the country in many ways. And if anybody's interested in getting a tour of that collection, please contact us. We're also looking for people who can help us to think about that collection in new and imaginative ways. What are new forms of exhibiting that we could imagine together?
Well, I must admit that I was not aware of the collection. Any specific artists you can mention that are included in the collection? Or?
Well, we had a guest from the IMA, and he came in. He said, "Where's your Nicholson? Where's your Nicholson?" And this is a new artist to me, but we have it's a beautiful wall-sized painting, abstract. And it is extremely engaging, insured for a lot of money, and it's just a remarkable piece of art in the history of art. And so to have it at CTS and to be able to think about it in theological terms and in terms that relate to how do we train our leaders. One thing I think about is this. Pastors and counselors, chaplains who go out and to lead churches, they are curators too. Choral music, you mentioned it, but also visual art, architecture, churches, synagogues, mosques, these are curators of our great artistic traditions. So what we need to do is to train them to be curators and to be sensitive in people who enjoy and delight in the arts so they can help others do the same.
Travis DiNicola with Dr. Matthew Meyer Bolton, the new president of the Christian Theological Seminary. To learn more about CTS's work and programs, visit cts.edu, cts.edu. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
The old year is fast running away.
Yes, it is.
So if you made a resolution at the beginning of 2011 to mm-hmm. see more things in the arts,
or
you're going to have to
things.
Really hurry.
I know. You still got a little bit of time left,
We have a little
though.
Bit of time, and we have some suggestions on our calendar that we call
What'll We Do? This year and next,
This
I
year
suppose.
And next, that's right.
Well, I want to start with up at the Civic Theater. They are continuing to run Roald Dahl's Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, which is just a ton of fun. This is running at the Targington through January 7th.
Love that.
Great play to see for the whole family. Quite a tasty, tempting, delicious treat.
Well, you know, sometimes in the winter we get that seasonal affective disorder thing, and we have to remind ourselves that the sun will come out tomorrow. Oh, you know where I'm going with this. You know that the Cardinal Stage Company's production of Annie continues through this Sunday with a performance this Friday night at 7. If you're hearing us at Friday night, of course, you've missed that, so you don't care about that. But you might care about a noon matinee or a 4 o'clock show tomorrow, or the Sunday shows, which are at 2 and 7. Annie.
Very
for
cool.
the whole family.
Hey, there's some great dance and theatrical performances that are going on up at the Center for the Performing Arts. And, of course, we always think of the Palladium and the great concerts up there. But a couple that I wanted to mention, January 14th, 500 Clown, which is this clown company, is performing a very serious interpretation of Frankenstein, but done through mimes and very physical theater. I'm actually really looking forward to that. Also, some great dance coming up there, the Ron K. Brown Evidence Dance Company. Group out of Brooklyn is going to be performing on January 13th in the Tarkington, and Complexions Contemporary Ballet January 22nd at the Tarkington. So lots of interesting theater and dance going on up at the Center for the Performing Arts.
Absolutely. Yeah. That 500 Clown thing, that sounds fascinating. A serious interpretation of Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. Boy, you can't beat that for something completely
unless you're
different.
A villager.
You did not say
I don't,
that.
I mean, I'm just guessing. So.
Oh dear. I can't hold a torch to that.
Oh.
I seem to be on a family-friendly kick here. The Wizard of Oz continues at the Children's Museum, at the Theater at the Children's Museum. You can join Dorothy the Scarecrow, the Tin Woodman, and the Wizard as they experience new adventures in strange new lands. Dorothy, surprise, once again finds herself far from home, and it will take wit, friendship, and magic, there's your favorite word, mm-hmm. to get her back where she belongs, Wizard of Oz, at the Children's Museum for just a few more days.
Well, that sounds lovely. Hey, also, Clues has some great concerts coming up as well, including Street Drum Corps presenting Bang on Friday, January 20th. It sounds like very large and stimulating and loud, and lots of fun street drumming that's going to be performed.
Well, you can't beat that!
Unless you're a villager.
Unless
there we
you're
go.
A villager.
Oh, Sharon, it's so time for the new year. More some new jokes.
Pun-free 2012, are we saying? And no, you should know that there is no champagne anywhere near the studio. We have a strict no liquids in the studio rule. I don't know how to segue from there to Carmel Community Players' next play. It doesn't start till January 20th, but I'm telling you about it now because it's sure to be very popular. It's one of the most popular Stephen Sondheim shows ever written. It's Company. It's the story of Bobby, who's a single man who just has trouble committing fully to a steady relationship. He has five friends comprising married couples, and they're his best friends, and he has three girlfriends, and the show is kind of episodic, and we see him watching these different relationships and trying to figure out how to get some love and some comfort for himself. Some of the songs you might know, Side by Side by What Would We Do Without You, Almost said side by side by Sondheim there, didn't I? The Ladies Who Lunch and Being Alive. So that's all coming up starting January 20th, Company at Carmel Community Players.
Very good. Very good. Of course, there's lots of parties and things going on New Year's, and I'm sure that you've probably already made your plans. But if you have not yet, then may I recommend the Chatterbox Jazz Club on Mass Ave. Always has a great jazz party, and he does not take reservations. So you just if you're one of those people who did not make reservations 18 months ago, and that's a long time, and and don't know what you're doing tomorrow night or tonight, depending on which day you're listening to Are the Matter, then perhaps you should just go down to the Chatterbox.
What time should you show up?
Oh, I would say 9, 10, certainly by midnight.
Okay.
There you go.
So you can join Travis and Elizabeth to make a toast, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
If you got through Christmas and you're hearing us, or got through Hanukkah and you're thinking, oh, shoot, I kind of didn't do very well in the gift-giving department, I have a chance for you to redeem yourself, especially if you're buying a present for a grown-up. Get some tickets for the next Storytelling Arts of Indiana event. It's on Saturday, January 14th at 7:30 at the Basile Theater at the Indiana History Center. And it's called Naughty Bawdy Senior Stories, told by Rosalind Bresnik Perry, who says, although there is snow on the roof, it doesn't mean the fire is out. So I don't think we'll get too much more specific about that, but Naughty Bawdy Senior Stories, or get yourself tickets as a New Year's present, I'm just saying.
The New Year's making me feel older. Okay, last thing I've got, if you're looking, you're anticipating some New Year's resolutions, some new things to do this year, and perhaps you are a handbell ringer, then the Circle City Ringers is having auditions for their new season in January. And you need to check out CircleCityRingers.org if you'd like more information to schedule an audition for advanced level community handbells.
That was just so oddly specific, Travis.
Well, maybe there's somebody out there who's thinking now's the time. And they're thinking, what's the name of that organization? Oh, that rings a bell.
Oh, no. We'd give you some applause, but there's no clapper here. there are more things could see and do, but I think we should end our calendar right now before we pun again. And in all sincerity, we hope you've had a wonderful 2011 and are looking forward to an even better 2012.
That's right. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. We'll be back next year with that calendar we call.
What do we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Singer-songwriter Carrie Newcomer is always open to new inspiration, and her new album is a fascinating result of her being at the right place at the right time. The new album, Everything is Everywhere, was released on November 1st, and Sharon caught up with her at her home studio to find out what it was like for Carrie to work with classical Indian musicians.
Well, I have to ask you, before we talk about how the project came about, what did you know about Indian music before you started this project?
Well, I think I was very similar to many Americans in that, in the West, we're familiar with Indian music, often through the Beatles, through the sitar music that we heard through popular music and popular music forms at that time. I also, in Bloomington, where I live, there's a wonderful world music festival that happens every year. And I had encountered some Indian musicians who had come to the Lotus Festival and had performed there. But I really went to India with, I guess, a Westerner's limited knowledge of Indian music.
And how did this project get started?
Well, it was just an amazing experience. In 2009, I was invited to go to the American Embassy School in Delhi and be there for a week as an artist in residence. And I went there and worked with students creating works of art on the topics of peace and justice, which was just a really a wonderful experience with the students there. And then the American Center. The American Center is the cultural outreach division of the American Embassy in India. And they invited me to perform all over the country. They sent me, you know, to Bengal. They sent me to South India, to Mumbai, to Chennai. It was just really an amazing experience to go to different parts of the country and perform for Indian audiences, and then also in the afternoons work with community service organizations, particularly ones that young Indians were involved with. So it was just, I was there for a month. It was an amazing experience. And in each of these cities where I was performing and working with community projects, I also had the chance to meet Indian musicians. And it was just fabulous. I met young musicians who were working with more contemporary forms and fusion with pop and Bollywood type things, and then also traditional musicians who were, you know, working with the very old and ancient art forms of those areas, and also classical musicians in the Indian world. So when I was in Delhi, that's where I met Aman Ali Khan, Amjad Ali Khan, Aman and Ayan Ali Khan. And, you know, they're...
you have a collaborator on the interview with you. Who is that?
My dog. My dog, Sophie.
Aww.
Should I stop and go again?
No, not at all. It's delightful. So okay, you met them.
Well, yeah, I'm now home in my house in the woods, and I have two dogs.
Aww.
But anyways, I met the Khan family, who are just beloved in India, and they are masters of the classical sarod. For those of us in the West, we're familiar with the sitar. So the comparison would probably be the sitar would be in the classical world would be like the violin, and the sarod being like the cello. It's a lower, very resonant instrument. It's a beautiful instrument. And the Khan family, Amjad Ali Khan and his two sons, are thought of as the preeminent classical sarod players in the world. I mean, they're amazing. And
there's a long family tradition, right? Six and seven generations of this family have been pursuing music.
Absolutely, it is this long, beautiful, deep history of music in this family. And I was invited to their home one afternoon, and we went to their studio and we played music together, and we were all so touched by what was happening there in that room that day. Our music comes from very different forms. The forms that we use are very different, but there was a common spiritual well. There was a very deep place that we all sensed that the music was coming from. And we decided that when the Khans were touring in the United States next, that it would be really fun to go in the studio to try some kind of collaboration. And that's what happened. Last summer, the Khan family was touring in the United States. I wrote a collection of songs very specifically for the collaboration, sent them kind of via the internet for them to hear and to think about and consider. And then we went to the studio, and we recorded these songs. And we really, all of us, I think we all stepped out into risky area. You know, it's this kind of collaboration I don't think has ever happened before. The forms are very different. So we all pushed our edges creatively and artistically. We all stepped out and took risk with this. And it was very exciting. And what we came up with, you know, we really didn't know that we would make an album from it. But we all were so happy with what happened in the studio. You know, we finished it, and over the course of a year, you know, mixed it and put it into a form that we could release it as a recording. It was released in India on the Times of India label in August of this year, and I just got back from India again. I was just there for 3 weeks, and that was very, very lovely, and it will be released here in the United States as a benefit for the Interfaith Hunger Initiative that's based right in Indianapolis.
Despite your feeling that, and I'm sure this felt very real, that you were each side of this collaboration was kind of pushing boundaries a little bit, the result on the album is so organic that I found myself thinking, well, yes, these instruments belong with this song and this voice. Is there anything in Indian tradition that is like the singer-songwriter tradition that we Westerners know, or in particular that we know here in the United States?
Well, there is music right now in India that has been very influenced by Western music forms. You know, the Bollywood, more commercial tradition. They're kind of doing fusion with Western form mm-hmm. and Indian sounds. So, you know, that is familiar, I guess. But a collaboration with a classical musician and this style of music is really, like I said, I don't know if it's actually happened. So it's very, it happened very organically, like you said. There was just this great spirit of experimentation. And, you know, I can't say enough wonderful things about Amjad Ali Khan and the entire family in terms of being willing just to, you know, joyously experiment with this. Indian classical music is improvisational by nature. It's not a written form. And so part of it was going into this studio and knowing that what was happening there would be improvised in that moment. In that way, like our American jazz, in that there's a form, you know, there's a melody, perhaps, that you're basing on, or a set of chords that you're basing on. But what happens in the moment.
How scary. Scary in a good way, but still scary.
Well, you walk into it with a lot of trust that here are these amazing musicians who operate from this, you know, very much in the moment sense of music, and just being willing to step into that, to be open to what happened, to go with it, to change things as they evolved within the studio. It was really a great process. It was recorded at Airtime Studios in Bloomington, Indiana. My co-producer with me is David Weber, who is just such an instrumental, no pun intended there, but instrumental part of making this album happen. His, you know, working together with him to produce this, to be willing to bring these songs, to let them evolve, to move and change and become what they became. You know, it's just really just a wonderful, like it's a very exciting experience. But yeah, nothing was certain. It was definitely, you know, the joy of creation and stepping right out there on the limb, really. It's like, well, okay.
The worst that can happen is we say, we won't put that on the album.
Well, yeah, or, you know, there really wasn't a worst that could happen. I mean, other than we would be disappointed, I guess, but like I said, when we were recording this, when I wrote the songs for this collection, it really wasn't a set thought that we would release it as an album. It was really entered into with the spirit of making something, creating something together, and seeing what happens. You know, and that's a wonderful thing, too, a lot of times, I think, in the arts, especially when you're working as a full-time artist, there's a certain sense of product that can that can kind of creep into it, that I need to be making a product. But sometimes art is for the making of art, and it's a song on the way to another song. It's the journey, and I think that's really important in terms of the arts and in terms of being a creator of the arts, in the arts, that you have times when you just create, when you're making something, when you're stretching everything you know, when you're using all your artistic tools, because that's what you do. Not necessarily because this is my job, but this is what I do. This is who I am. This is what makes me probably happiest in all the world. So it was that. I think you can. There's a sense when you hear this album. There is a sense of that kind of joy to it. Like we are just having a great time here. And at the same time, I have to say too. I think this album is probably one of the most overtly spiritual albums. There's always been a spiritual current that has run through my work. Spiritual, not necessarily religious, but a very deep spiritual current that runs through my work. That's a matter of censorship. There's a spiritual current in my life, so there's a spiritual current in my work. If there wasn't, I'd be censoring something pretty important about how I see the world and experience the world.
Sharon Gamble with singer-songwriter Carrie Newcomer. Carrie's collaboration with classical Indian musician released on November 1st. You can learn more at carrienewcomer.com. Again, carrienewcomer.com. And here's a sample track from the album called Everything Is Everywhere.
I could hold a bear, 'cause everything is everywhere. 'Cause everything is everywhere.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 when we kick off 2012 with new interviews and that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So we'll see you next year, and please listen next year to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.